The Steinhoff saga continues. Moneyweb has been reliably advised that Steinhoff International didn't alert shareholders to the fact that the previous owners of Techie Town had taken issue with the fact that Steinhoff had not, in their view, conducted the transaction, that is, the buying of Techie Town from them, in a transparent manner, and on top of that, it had not come to the party in terms of making a provision for bonuses it had promised to Techie Town's former shareholders. To unpack the latest on the saga, I'm joined in studio by my colleague Warren Thompson, who's been covering the story extensively. So, Warren, before we get into the nitty-gritties, just give us a background of the Techie Town deal, who the owners were, what the terms were, and when it was concluded.
Yes, so many South African consumers will know about Techie Town. They provide almost like discount shoes, affordable price shoes and footwear, as well as a few fashion accessories through outlets that are peppered throughout the country. And basically, it was started by a guy called Bram van Hastien. He started the first store, as I understand it, in Mossel Bay in 1989, very long time ago, built it up over a period of years. And Steinhoff came and bought the company in August of 2016 for 3.2 billion rand. Now, when they did that, instead of just paying cash for the entire 3.2 billion rand, many of the founders and executives chose instead to have the payment in the form of Steinhoff shares, which they received. So they did that, and in addition to that, they were locked up for 3 years. So they took receipt of the shares as payment for the business, but they couldn't sell the shares until 3 years' time, which would take us through to August next year. So that is the original transaction, and obviously for them to judge the value of the Steinhoff shares, they had to look at the Steinhoff financial accounts for 2016, as well as other documents like what we call a pre-listing statement before Steinhoff listed in Frankfurt, provides investors with a whole range of information about the company, including its financial position, its financial affairs, and that sort of thing. And that's ultimately where the problem came in.
You've set the scene very nicely indeed. And of course, this company has lost over 95% of its value, so they're sitting with a dud. So now that's the background. So Techie Town, they approached Steinhoff and they wanted to almost be restituted to their former position before the transaction happened. Just tell us a little bit about that and this expectation on their part of a bonus.
Okay, so when they did this arrangement where they sold their business to Steinhoff, they agreed to lock up their shares so they couldn't sell their shares. At the same time, they negotiated basically a bonus. They said to Steinhoff, or with Steinhoff CEO Marcus Hirst at the time, they said, we can't sell our shares for 3 years, but we want to be incentivized to really make this Techie Town perform very well inside Steinhoff. So would you pay us a bonus based on the performance of Techie Town as it's owned by Steinhoff? So the earn-out, as they call it, runs for a period of 3 years, and it's dependent on the operating profits, more or less, of what Techie Town, the growth in the operating profits that Techie Town delivers for Steinhoff. So basically, Marcus Eustace said, okay, guys, if you grow the operating profits, you'll be entitled to 20% of them. More or less, okay? It was a little bit more technical than that, but that was basically the scheme of arrangement. So they agreed to that, and then when Techie Town then got pushed into Star, which was listed on the JSE, they wanted the arrangement changed so that the performance measured not just Techie Town, but all the businesses under this particular division in Star called the Specialty Fashion and Footwear Division. And the Star CEO agreed to that, according to the Techie Town owners. So basically what's happened is, because of the decline in the Steinhoff share price due to the alleged fraud, the shareholders that sold their business to Techie Town said, well, hold on, the basis on which we did that deal has now been proven to be false. Your financials are nowhere near what you said they were. The value that we attributed to the Steinhoff share is not there, and therefore we think we've been sold a lemming or a dud here, and we want to be returned to the position we were before we sold our business to Steinhoff. So there's two things going on. They want their business back. They want the transaction by Steinhoff reversed. And number two, they want it formally recorded that they had this bonus scheme in place, because Steinhoff was supposed to raise something called a contingent liability, which basically means there's a reasonable chance in 3 years' time that if these guys really run the business well, we might have to pay them a big bonus. That bonus is estimated at the moment to be between 455 to 900 million rand.
Now, from your investigations, you have letters in your possession which show that the former Tekkie Town owners' lawyers warned Steinhoff that they shouldn't deal, or if they were to deal with Steinhoff Africa shares, they should at least do so with caution while the bonus claim issue was being sorted out, as Tekkie Town, as you now say, falls under STAR. Now, Steinhoff didn't do that. They went ahead and sold 200 million shares or whatever it was, accruing 3.75 billion rand. And they did that without letting the shareholders know of this particular claim that the former owners of Tekkie Town had. What are the implications of that?
So the implications of that in a public market where shares are traded between various participants, and in some cases by people who have access to information that others don't. So clearly, if you're a CFO or a financial director of a company, you have information about that company and the performance of that company, which would affect the value of the shares. The same applies in this circumstance, because Steinhoff knew about the problems and the claims that the Tekkie Town founders were bringing to them, which might, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky from a legal perspective, might have an effect on the value of the STAR shares. Okay, so they knew about these issues formally at the end of March. Steinhoff, because of the trouble it's in, then needed to sell some of the shares it owned in STAR, and they did that in early April. So they sold 200 million shares in STAR, and what's basically come out now is that with this article, we have published the fact that the Steinhoff board and its executive committee knew about the issues but chose not to disclose them to the people that they were selling the STAR shares to. Now, this is probably where we need a lot of legal insight, but on face value, if there's a person wants to take a business out of a bigger company based on a false transaction or a fraudulent transaction or whatever you want to call it, and they have instructed lawyers to start a legal process against, in this case, STAR's parent company, Steinhoff, that is a very material development and would affect, should affect, or could potentially affect the price of the STAR shares. So now you've gone and had a whole lot of investors buying shares in STAR without the knowledge of what the executives and the board knew. And certainly in financial markets, that appears to be a massive conflict of interest, and has serious ramifications for the credibility of the Steinhoff management and board.
I don't know if you know, Warren, but just give us a sense of perspective. How much of the STAR value would Tekkie Town take up in terms of all the assets that STAR covers?
So that's a good question. So I think and I stand to be corrected here, but the equity of the whole value of STAR's shares would be, I think, in the region of 60 billion rand, and the value of Tekkie Town was 3.2 billion rand at the time they did the transaction. So it's a big number in relation to STAR, and it's an even bigger number in relation to Steinhoff, because Steinhoff now only has a market value of about 8 billion rand. And that's the point, is that they in the markets that we talk about this idea of materiality. Is it big enough to affect the price of the share? And certainly from my perspective and from people I've spoken to around this transaction, that would certainly be the case. So the implication is, why did the Steinhoff board and and its executives not disclose these issues before the book build, before the shares were sold.
Now, a very key question that needs to be explored is Investec was the bank that was involved in that whole accelerated book build when they sold those 200 million shares. Do you get a sense that Investec would have been told by Steinhoff about this material matter? And if they did know about it, what are the implications from their perspective?
Yeah, so there's two parallels here. I think the first is, from people we've spoken to, it should definitely be incumbent on Steinhoff's management to inform Investec about the issue.
Just for the benefit of our listeners, just explain what role Investec would have been playing in that whole sale of shares process.
Okay, so Steinhoff's now looking to sell a large number of shares, much more than what is ordinarily traded on the market in any given day. So it's a big number, and what they do is they hire a bank like Investec to run around to various institutional investors and ask them if they're interested in buying the shares. And that's called basically being the book runner. You run around, see who's keen, take all the orders, and then eventually you disperse all the shares to the people if there's enough demand to buy all those shares. So there is, and I'm not an expert here, but there is some due diligence a bank should do when they are asked to do this. Absa were invited to also be the book runner, so they were going to have two of them. But they declined to do so, okay, from sources we've heard, spoken to. So the question then is, did Investec know? And that's just a question that we don't know. What we do know is that Investec has lent Steinhoff and its directors a lot of money. So in many cases, certainly from one perspective, you could argue Investec, by helping to sell these shares, was in effect helping itself, because it has a large degree of exposure to lending to Steinhoff. So it does get a little bit tricky, but ultimately we will have to wait and hear from Investec. They declined to comment.
From all your research and writings on this subject, you've been looking at it very closely. Have you always felt that Investec has acted at an arm's length with Steinhoff?
Investec and its executives on a personal level have very close ties to some of the executives at Steinhoff, including Markus Juster. As a bank, I can't see, other than perhaps concern around this issue, that they have acted in anything but an arm's length manner with Steinhoff. I certainly have nothing I've heard has alluded to that, or nothing I've seen has alluded to that. But certainly the relationships between one of Investec's directors, Bernard Cantor, and Markus Juster appears to have been very close. And one would argue that in the case of the company that they jointly owned, that developed a very upmarket residential complex in Cape Town, and then it was bought by Steinhoff, you have to question whether that was ethical and all above board. But so far as I can tell with Investec, while it has lent to Steinhoff, lent to directors, there's nothing I've heard or seen that would suggest anything is untoward.
Okay. And then lastly, Warren, Steinhoff came out and told the market that they're going to be giving shareholders a sense of how the company's doing in sort of interims for 6 months. So the question that I want to put to you is, and on the back of that, their shares actually rose. People seem to get excited. But what's the point of getting excited about what's happening in the life of Steinhoff in the past 6 months, when we actually have no clarity as to what's been happening in that company for the past 3 years, because we know they've been misrepresenting the facts?
So Steinhoff had a meeting with its lenders on Friday last week. And I think what was clear is that they provided an update in terms of sales, and sales have remained relatively strong. The margins, the profit margins that they've enjoyed, have declined slightly, but not incredibly so. So while they have major issues around the amount of debt that they have, banks that did lend to them wanting their money back, having to find new sources of financing is still a major, major issue. It seems that the underlying businesses have traded fairly well. Now, if the underlying businesses had started to deteriorate in terms of their sales, in terms of very sharp drops in some of their profit margins, there would have been a lot more concern. So I think the market took a little bit of heart from the fact that sales, at the very least, a pretty easy number to measure and audit, has remained pretty strong. But of course now they're in a tricky situation because in terms of the rules of accounting, when you provide results for a six-month period like they hope to do at the end of June, you need to provide comparable figures for the same period the year before. Now, because they've withdrawn all their financial statements up to 2015, they're not going to have any comparables. So the numbers we are going to get is almost like a pro forma number or a preliminary number, and it's not going to be audited. But at some level, if you believe that the company is now past and it's being honest about investigating what actually happened and it wants to do the right thing, then certainly we should glean a little bit of information in those results around how all the various businesses are doing.
And very, very lastly, PwC is looking into Steinhoff's books. When are we expected to see that report so that going forward, you know, we do get that comparator? When is Steinhoff going to be in a position to steadily give the market information about how it's looking?
So PwC was hired obviously in early December last year as these revelations and the news of these irregularities, potential fraud broke. I would imagine this is one of the biggest forensic investigations ever undertaken globally, outside of maybe Enron. This is a very, very, very complex company from its group structure, the amount of debt that it has, the thousands of entities I've been led to believe they use to operate their various businesses. PwC have employed 60 full-time people on this investigation, running 14 different work streams, and we are expected to have the key findings and the report by the end of this year. So it's basically going to take them a full year to get to the bottom, might be a bit sooner. So until that happens, that is going to be obviously, we hope, a very definitive and comprehensive explanation of what transpired at this company. But we're only expecting that towards the end of the year.
That was Warren Thompson, my colleague at MoneyWeb.